Switzerland, 1995. A stranger arrives at the home of the reclusive American author Patricia Highsmith. He says he's from her publishers, who'd love her to write one last thriller. But she's suspicious. Who is he, and what does he really want? Hello, I'm Fiona Gruber, and I caught up with Switzerland's author, the playwright Joanna Murray-Smith, to talk about her lifelong obsession with the enigmatic Highsmith and how her theatrical thriller is an homage to the novelist's mastery of suspense.
I have a very, very early memory of lying in bed next to my mother in our little summer cabin before I could read and watching her reading Patricia Highsmith, who she read obsessively. I read them myself as soon as I was old enough, and I think I certainly felt that she was an incredibly psychologically astute writer. And the way in which she got inside characters' heads was remarkable and thrilling.
And you've set it in the last year of her life, 1995, in Switzerland. What made you hone in on that last year?
I think I was interested in the person that she became more than the person she was becoming. I was interested in what her life had led her to in terms of her personality. And so to concentrate on Patricia Highsmith as an older woman felt inherently more interesting to me than a woman who was sort of on the journey to becoming what she was going to become. Added to that, plays are always given a singular advantage by being physically located somewhere which is isolated and contained, because that works so well on the stage. And I think the fact that she was a recluse and those last few years were perhaps the most reclusive of her life made that a particularly appropriate time and place to write a play about.
Perhaps we should fill in the idea of Patricia Highsmith, because she's very famous for one of her early novels, Strangers on a Train, which Alfred Hitchcock made into a film. And then, of course, there's Carol, her lesbian romance, which was recently made into a film as well. But probably her most famous books are what are known as the Ripleyed, the Tom Ripley novels, The Charismatic Killer. And you've concentrated on them as well, haven't you?
I have concentrated on them because Tom Ripley, who was a figment of her imagination, became perhaps the most real companion in her life to Highsmith, at least as I interpret it. She was infatuated with Ripley, and she admitted as such, even though he was a figment of her imagination. And so much so that when she was awarded prizes, literary prizes, in one particular example, she had the inscription on the prize changed from being awarded to Patricia Highsmith to being awarded to Patricia Highsmith and Tom Ripley. So she saw him, I think, as key and kind of the cornerstone of her eventual success and the admiration she attracted as a writer. She had been really long ignored or kind of undervalued by the American largely male literary fraternity, something she was absolutely acutely aware of. But in Europe, she was considered, you know, in the ranks of sort of Camus and the great existentialists. And I think she saw Tom Ripley as being the example of her finest writing and probably the writing which attracted attention to her as a really brilliant analyst of the dark side of human psychology.
Yes, because in the Tom Ripley books, there's this real sense of apprehension, and you side with him even though he's the baddie. And in your play as well, it's a two-hander. You have old Patricia Highsmith living as a recluse in Switzerland, as you said, and then a new arrival, a young man who knocks on her door from her publishing company in New York. So tell us a bit about Edward Ridgway, the young interloper.
Edward Ridgway arrives in Switzerland as Highsmith sees him, an intruder into her peace and quiet, to try to encourage the failing writer, failing in lots of ways, physically failing as well, to write one last Ripley. And she interprets this as being the publishing house wanting her to write a book that makes money, because the Ripley books did make money. But he says that he's motivated by lots of things, not least being that Ripley was her greatest creation and she owes it to herself to strut her stuff again at the height of her powers, and her best chance of that is by concentrating on Ripley. What happens is that the young man who she belittles and demeans and says she doesn't want around gradually insinuates his way into Highsmith's world in all kinds of ways, which I won't go too far into. But what happens is that through this young man, we begin to understand the love affair that goes on between a writer and her characters, and how sometimes the world inside the writer's head is more compelling and more desirable than the actual world.
That's right, because not wanting to give away too much, there's a real kind of cat and mouse game that's going on, and one of my favourite bits is when he opens his suitcase. She's asked for certain things from New York and Paris, and you've created this sort of little suitcase full of things that signify British Highsmith: some Brooks Brothers white shirts, some cans of Campbell's mushroom soup, and a dagger, a really lethal, fine and very precise dagger that she sort of croons over. Because that was a real part of her character, wasn't it? She was very attracted to violence, wasn't she? She was very attracted to the idea of rage and killing. And that was a real part of her, wasn't it?
Absolutely. She was much, much more interested in people who behaved badly than people who behaved well. Who isn't? She was deeply interested and engaged with the psychology of human beings at its nastiest. And she was a pretty good exemplar of that herself, being a really disagreeable, racist, anti-Semitic, mean-spirited recluse. But she was also tremendously witty and incredibly insightful and, at her best, an absolutely brilliant writer. And when he brings this suitcase of items that she's requested from home, it's sort of poignant in a way, because it shows, I think, the degree to which she felt connected to America, despite the fact that she'd lived most of her life away from it. You never quite escape your roots. But also she had kind of become an old woman. So a lot of things which, of course, you could get in other ways, she still felt had to be kind of physically brought to her from New York. She was also absolutely meticulous about physical possessions, what they were and where they were. So she placed things in her house in a kind of order. She was a curator of her own domestic environment, and she didn't like anybody messing with that. She only wore a certain sort of shirt. She only drank a certain kind of soup. She only wore a certain kind of trousers. She only wore a certain kind of shoe, very manly. And in lots of ways, the play, although it has the freedom of a writer's own, you know, drive to do what they want to do, which I do have, it also is based on a lot of factual biographical evidence about Highsmith.
It's a beautiful production, isn't it?
It's really just astonishing production, because from the get-go, I kind of had in mind that this play, both in the writing and in the production of it, should mimic Highsmith's own style. So I always wanted the play to be that cat and mouse, to be really a thriller on stage, which is kind of an unfashionable genre. But I felt that it needed to encapsulate the same qualities that Highsmith's own stories encapsulated, in terms of thrill and speed and darkness and anxiety and humour. All of which she had in spades.
Well, you've obviously completely immersed yourself into the world of Patricia Highsmith for this play. If you could go back in time and meet her, is there anything you'd really like to ask her? Is there anything about her that you're still intrigued about, that you'd like to find out about?
I would run a million miles from Patricia Highsmith. If I had the opportunity to meet her, I would not seize that opportunity. I think North Fitzroy is about as close as I want to get. She was a really difficult person, and she would not have liked me, and she would have certainly found it incredibly impertinent for another writer to try to get inside her head. Why was it that I was attracted to and so sympathetic to a reclusive, bitter, angry, aging female writer? I'm not sure I want to answer that.
Maybe a cautionary tale for the future.
Exactly.
Joanna Murray-Smith, thanks very much indeed.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you, Fiona.
And Switzerland is on at Southbank Theatre, the Sumner, from September the 17th until October the 29th. Book online at mtc.com.au or phone the box office on 03-8688-0800. This podcast is part of the MTC Talk series. To listen to more episodes from the series, visit mtc.com.au/mtctalks or search for MTC Talks in the iTunes Store or on SoundCloud.